Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee, karup, guten tak, jiao, weevi, vat, kat, bang, half a day, jai, janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From under my radiation protective desk on the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison kilitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt bribocratic corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, home of Uncle Sam Manila, where they sure eat a lot of dead animal body parts. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, dedicating today's program to the loving memory of Shirley Wilkes Johnson, a true pioneer deep in the heart of Texas. She was the heart of Texas. Shirley died suddenly last week of a condition she had since birth, too soon at the age of 73. Heroes are not usually measured by the enormity of their kindness or how much love they bring into the world, but Shirley Wilkes Johnson was not your usual hero. She was the vegan visionary of Texas. Vegan for 27 years, she loved animals and people, and everyone loved Shirley. She was instrumental in starting animal rights activism in Houston. She established an amazing annual statewide vegan chili cook-off that I attended about 10 years ago in Houston. The place was packed. So many vegans in Texas? Thanks, Shirley. After hearing my radio program, Shirley was inspired to co-found the radio program Go Vegan Texas, later evolving into Vegan World Radio on the Houston Pacifica outlet, KPFT 90.1. Now, I can't get KPFA in the Bay Area or KPFK in Los Angeles to broadcast a vegan animal rights radio program, yet Shirley did it in Texas. Well, they say everything is bigger in Texas, and that surely applies to Shirley's heart. She was one of the kindest angels to have walked this planet, a loving and very much loved wife, mom, grandmother, and a great ambassador for veganism through her cooking and cooking classes and recipes. I cried like a baby on this past Wednesday's Vegan World Radio, the memorial program for Shirley. I was supposed to see her last weekend in Southern California at the celebration for the release of Supreme Master Ching Hai's new poetry book, Love of Centuries. How appropriate it would have been for Shirley to be at this celebration of love, but she never made it. But the life that she led was itself a celebration of love. This weekend, I'm in Houston for the memorial celebration of Shirley's life. Everyone who knew her loved her. And I hope that people will honor the life of Shirley Wilkes Johnson by going vegan. That was what was most important to her. Shirley is irreplaceable. We would need 10 people right now, maybe 100 people right now, to go vegan right away. People who, like Shirley, would dedicate their lives to convincing others to go vegan for the animals, for the children, for the planet. Do it for Shirley. Shirley always said that she looked forward to the party that would be that there would be to celebrate shutting down the last slaughterhouse. Well, Shirley will be with us at that party in spirit when it happens. Now it's time to plan for the party and make it happen as soon as possible. So please, go vegan for Shirley. Holy cow, I am barely functioning this week. In tears and just so in shock. It's just so shocked by Shirley's loss. I didn't have the time or inclination to try to sell advertising this week, nor did I solicit donations to support the show. So, well, this would be a really good week to support Go Vegan Radio with a tax-deductible donation. You know, we have to purchase airtime every week, and you can help. I'm sure Shirley would approve. You can make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147. And you can donate online at goveganradio.org. And, so there I was in Cerritos last week expecting Shirley's arrival. And then I got the shocking call, you know, right before I was to speak at the event. And yeah, I just was barely functional there too. So I apologize to the Supreme Master Qinghai International Association. I was so upset and confused. Actually, I think I gave the speech normally that I would give to the annual ALF convention. Although my joke about bombing slaughterhouses went over surprisingly well, I just should have been, thinking, well, I should have realized when no one in the audience had a ski mask on that, I was at a different place, but that should have been my first indication. But I was distracted. I was actually surprised to be on a panel with Richard Green, who was on Air America when I was on Air America. It was the first time we had met, and Richard announced, unbeknownst to me, that Go Vegan with Bob Linden generated the most complaints to Air America. How dare that guy tell us what to eat, was the usual complaint. But I'm not really telling anybody what to eat. It's more like what not to eat, or whom not to eat, or whom not to murder. And then Richard, political junkie that he is, took the discussion toward politics and truth. And that's when, again, thinking that I was at an ALF convention, I mentioned how the response of our country, to some meatheads flying planes into buildings in New York, was to bomb a totally irrelevant country and innocent people who had nothing to do with the tragedy. And I suggested that if our government, our gov-enronment, were actually interested in protecting its citizens, after all, meat and dairy kill more Americans every year than all wars combined, if our country were really interested in protecting its citizens, it would bomb slaughterhouses. Very surprisingly, I got so much laughter and applause there, I didn't realize, again, that I wasn't at an ALF conference. Well, after all the sorrow of this week, I do have some good news. All slaughterhouses have not been bombed. Oh, and of course, I mentioned that if the government were to bomb slaughterhouses, it would, of course, make sure that nobody is still there, like the ALF policy or credo. No humans or other animals should ever be harmed, which is usually contrary to the policy of our government. Anyway, as our wars keep on droning and droning and droning, we really can't afford war and vivisection in this country. Make up your mind. Do you want to waste billions every year on war or worthless animal experimentation? As World Week for Animals in Laboratories is upon us, we need to ask ourselves such questions. How much of a waste is animal research? You'll want to hear my guest coming up on today's program, John Pippin, M.D. He's the Senior Medical and Research Advisor for PCRM, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Yes, you Tea Partiers listening, you want to cut spending in the right place? Keep listening today. Vivisection is the right place. Also, agricultural subsidies for meat and dairy, huh? So the good news this week, case dismissed against my friend Brian Monell, arrested when I was last July at a protest against Ringling Brothers at the Honda Center in Anaheim. And I haven't talked about Brian's case until now, out of respect to his attorneys who wanted his case unfettered by Bob Linden commentary. Anyway, so after I had used my bullhorn last summer without a problem at Staples Center, I really wanted what I was saying to be video recorded, maybe put on YouTube. So I asked Brian to videotape my protest in Anaheim. And unlike L.A., where there was no problem. I had a good rapport with the police. Anyway, as soon as I turned on my bullhorn at the Honda Center, I was arrested. And while being handcuffed, I called out to Brian to videotape my arrest. And as he moved toward me, recording me, camera up to his eyes, surprisingly, Anaheim police officers moved toward Brian to block him. And then they initiated contact. And then Brian was tackled from behind by some plainclothes undercover thug who grabbed the bullhook that Brian was holding, that he brought to the circus to show the people attending how cruel the treatment and training of elephants is. how cruel the treatment and training of elephants are. It's unbelievable that, you know, the bullhook is a large wooden stick with a sharp metal hook. And then this plainclothes thug grabbed, the bullhook and was digging it into Brian's neck, which in itself constitutes attempted murder, I believe, and certainly police brutality. The cops then brought me and a very bloody Brian into a cramped security room at the Honda Center. And I heard them tell Brian he was being charged with assault with a deadly weapon on a police officer. That was total fabrication. I couldn't believe it. He was shocked by it, you know. And then emergency medical professionals were working on Brian, warning him, not to move, not to turn to talk to me, as his injuries were life-threatening. Well, fortunately, Brian's case was dismissed this past week, as mine was a few weeks prior. And I hope he sues them. I hope he sues the city of Anaheim and wins a fortune. You know, what a bunch of liars, you know, assault with a deadly weapon on a police officer, when the truth is attempted murder and police brutality by the Anaheim Police Department. Now, one thing they did get right, the bullhook is a deadly weapon now, as defined by the Anaheim Police Department, who said so? So who would ever want to go to a show where the animals are trained using deadly weapons like Ringling Brothers? Anyhow, more brutality against elephants is taking place now at the Santa Ana Zoo with its cruel elephant rides. Please demand that Mayor Pulido of Santa Ana end the elephant rides. He can do it, but so far he shows that, well, he's a mayor who just doesn't care. Maybe that'll be his next, next time he runs for office, you know. I'm Mayor Pulido, and, we beat animals for fun here in Santa Ana. We kidnap them. We torture them. And I don't care, you know. Okay, our discussion of the fraudulent science known as vivisection coming up with John Pippin, M.D. Later in the hour, some protests against vivisection that you may want to attend. And vivisectors and Ringling Brothers don't want to be my friend, but you can be on Facebook. It's Bob Linden. And you can follow me like that plainclothes thug on Twitter. It's Go Vegan Radio. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Please support Anti-Vivisection Radio with a tax-deductible donation. You can make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147. And for archives and podcasts and to donate online, visit goveganradio.org.
Cows, pigs, and chickens don't want to be food.
VeganEssentials.com, your award-winning online vegan superstore with over 1,200 different all-vegan products in stock. From food to footwear, personal care to household items, it's all there at VeganEssentials.com. Enter GVR for Go Vegan Radio in the coupon box for your 10% discount on all orders over $50. Limited time only, VeganEssentials.com. Call 866-88-VEGAN, vegan owned and operated, VeganEssentials.com. Enter GVR in the coupon box for 10% off now. What you want is at VeganEssentials.com. You'll love Loving Hut, the fastest growing chain of vegan restaurants ever. Now with over 200 worldwide, the first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford students and faculty have one at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. Visit lovinghut.us for the location near you, including three in San Francisco, Oak Ridge Mall in San Jose, and Elk Grove. You'll love Loving Hut. Visit lovinghut.us.
We got something for you who don't want meat. A natural soy product and a tasty treat. It's tofurkey. That's what I said, tofurkey. There's tofurkey roast deli slices too. They have tofurkey sausage, even jerky to chew. We admit the name is kind of quirky, but once you taste it, you'll love tofurkey, tofurkey. Come on, give it a try. It's tofurkey.
See us at tofurkey.com.
T-O-F-U-R-K-Y, tofurkey.
Wherever quality natural foods are sold.
We don't eat chickens. We pet chickens.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, broadcasting now for over 10 years as the voice for compassion for animals in mainstream media, for the animals on the factory farms and animals in laboratories, too. If you'd like to support the show, we have to purchase the airtime each and every week. Free speech is expensive. You can make a tax-deductible donation by making your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147. Or you can donate online at goveganradio.org. And World Week for Animals in Laboratories is approaching. Every year, tens of millions of animals are imprisoned and tortured, forced to endure pain and suffering and death. Well, is this science or scientific fraud? Is spending billions of dollars annually on animal experimentation a wise investment given our current national economy and state of health care? Well, my guest today returns, Dr. John Pippin. John Pippin, MD, a senior medical and research advisor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM. Dr. Pippin leads PCRM's campaigns to replace the use of animals in medical research and education and in drug research and testing. Dr. Pippin has presented testimony before the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Institute of Medicine on the unreliability and misleading results of animal experimentation and has participated in database research with the House of Commons in the UK. Dr. Pippin is board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular diseases, and nuclear cardiology. He's been on the faculty of a number of medical schools, including Harvard Medical School and the Medical College of Virginia, where he was chosen cardiology professor of the year 3 times. He was awarded a 5-year clinician scientist award from the American Heart Association, and Dr. Pippin has co-authored 4 books and has authored or co-authored more than 70 peer-reviewed publications. He's been published in a number of leading medical journals, including Circulation, Journal of the American College of Cardiology, and the American Journal of Cardiology. Welcome back again, Dr. Pippin. How are you today?
I'm fine, Bob. Thanks for asking me back.
Well, thanks for being with us again. I really appreciate your being here. So, somebody with the kind of credentials that you have, one would think that you're part of the medical establishment and animal research is part of that establishment. What happened to you? Were you someone who believed in the validity of animal research at a certain point and then your opinion changed? Or how did you come to where you are today?
Well, I certainly was, and I guess still am part of the medical establishment. I was taught, just like everyone else going through medical school and residency training, that the use of animals for the study of human diseases was an unhappy but necessary step. And in fact, early in my career, Bob, I was an animal researcher myself. I did research using dogs in studying the use of radioactive tracers to learn about heart disease, and it was from doing that work that I realized, while it may be good for my career and prestige and useful for my institution because of the funding I could obtain, it really didn't help you or me or anyone else in terms of improving our health or changing our risk for heart disease, and that led me on the trail of investigating what I was doing from an objective viewpoint. And long story short, that was my aha moment, and I learned that what I was doing was a part of a failed paradigm, and I switched and have subsequently done research only in clinical medicine with real patients, and have also taken opportunities as they came up to point out that the emperor has no clothes in terms of the use of animals for studying human diseases or developing human drugs.
Well, what's wrong with the use of animals? Why doesn't it work? Why have you come to those conclusions? What do you see where you see the failures of animal research?
Well, the background that your listeners need to understand is that we have a huge history of the use of non-human animals to study human diseases and to develop human drugs. It goes back more than a half century. So there is plenty of history to go by, and what that history shows us is that Animals not only are not small people, in that you can study them and know what goes on in people, you cannot even translate what you learn in animals to people in any reliable fashion. Witness the fact that the studies of virtually all major chronic human diseases using animals has resulted in no cures or, in many cases, no substantial treatments at all, and that more than 90% of the drugs that look very good in animal tests, both safe and effective, fail when they are tested in people, and most of the few drugs that are approved then either get removed from the market or are labeled as dangerous in a black box warning on the drugs for things that were not detected during animal testing. So the factual evidence is 5 decades plus of data, of information, which if looked at objectively and not through the rose-colored glasses of the researchers who always have cures right around the corner, is an abject failure. The second and scientific reason, and the one I'd like to leave in your listeners' minds if I can, is that the genetics revolution, this human genome project, and identifying the DNA content and the genes in the human genetic map, as well as chimpanzees and dogs and cats and rats and mice and other animals, was intended by the scientists to identify genes that were associated with human diseases and then could be stuck into animals so that you would eliminate the problem of using animal results to predict what would happen in people. Well, the fascinating thing is it didn't work. As a matter of fact, not only did it not work in that these genetically modified animals are no more accurate than the old way of doing things, what we learned is it's not the genes after all that determine who gets diseases or how those diseases affect them or how they're going to respond to drugs. It's all of the other elements of your DNA that determine whether those genes are turned on or turned off, whether they make a little bit of their protein, whether they make a lot of their protein, and those things are species-specific. In other words, one species does not correlate with another, and they are immutable, which is to say you cannot overcome that problem. So what we have learned from the genetics revolution is not only why animals cannot predict what will happen in people, but we've also learned that you cannot fix it. You absolutely can't fix it. And that was the beginning of the path, I think, to overcoming our addiction to animal research.
Hmm. And you said that mice are not little people. Aren't the conditions in the laboratory, don't they work against tests being relevant anyway in terms of the subjects being under great stress and they're given diseases that don't exist in their species or the way they try to create diseases in animals in laboratories?
Well, that's exactly right, Bob. When we study a disease in an animal, first of all, researchers try to recreate, to the extent possible, human diseases in non-human animals. You can't do it. They don't get the same diseases we do. When you try to study multiple sclerosis in a mouse or a rat, you can't create multiple sclerosis. You can only stick a gene in there that maybe influences the production of a protein. When you try to study psychiatric diseases or neurological diseases or cancers are a great example, they just do not behave in the animals the way they do in humans. First of all, because they're not obtained the same way. Second of all, because they're not the same disease at all. And thirdly, because they don't behave like or respond to treatment like the same diseases in humans. So that's absolutely correct. And it's also true that animals in laboratories are under stress all the time, not just when they're being poked and prodded and sliced open and having cancer cells injected into it, but all the time. And that alone invalidates the results. But again, I want to emphasize, regardless of all of that, and all of that argument going on below the surface about how we treat laboratory animals and how they get used in the laboratory, it doesn't matter. You could create precisely the same circumstances in a laboratory animal that we have in the human disease, and it still wouldn't work because the genetics are different.
All right, and the genetics might be different between a man and a woman or two twins or in humans, too. You really can't extrapolate necessarily, right, results that...
Well, not only that, not just twins, but identical twins. So what we call in medicine monozygotic twins come from the same egg. There's been a very nice study from Italy done a few years ago that followed identical twins through a long period of their lifetime. And, you know, their genetic makeup is identical. It's the same. And they're the same species. You couldn't have a better test tube, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that because the genes are expressed differently in the different twins, they have different susceptibilities to diseases, different responses to medicine. In fact, between identical twins, one twin may respond to an antibiotic just fine, and the other may have an allergic reaction. And these differences become greater as the twins age. So it's not only the genes you're born with, but how they're turned on and turned off, and how your environment interacts with those genes that changes that whole relationship over time. And a very fundamental question that your listeners should think about is, if we can't even use one identical twin to predict what's going to happen to his twin, what in the heck are we doing using mice and rats and cats and dogs and monkeys to try to do this?
Absolutely. We're talking to John Pippin, MD. He's Senior Medical and Research Advisor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And we talk about the failure rate of drug testing, for example. I mean, I think we're reminded of the Vioxes and Celebrexes of the world. Isn't there a high rate of death related to drugs that have been successfully tested on animals?
Yes, if you look only at drugs that have been successfully tested in animals, in other words, drugs that have gone all the way through the pipeline at the drug companies up to the point where they begin to test them in people, more than 90% of those drugs fail during human testing, either because they don't work or because they have very serious side effects that were not detected during animal testing. Now, of the very small percentage of drugs that do make it through human testing, about half will either be recalled from the market or be labeled with a black box warning, which is the most serious warning that you can get from the FDA, for adverse effects that were not detected during animal testing. Add to that to the fact that the FDA tells us that 3 out of 4 new drugs are what they call Me Too drugs, which is to say they're the 7th statin drug or the 6th non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. In other words, there's nothing new about them. They're just a way for the drug companies to make more money. And then when you add to that the fact that drug companies themselves tell us that once their drugs are approved, they're not going to work for most people, but only a small subset of people. And this is especially true for cancer drugs. And you shake all those numbers out and you find out you have to take about 100 drugs that did very well in animal tests to get one drug that works in people that is a unique and safe drug. Now, that's not science. It's not even the toss of a coin. It's worse than the toss of a coin. It's fraud.
And that's billions and billions of dollars every year. We're coming up on a break, so I'd like to ask you to stay with us so we can continue. We have World Week for Animals in Laboratories coming up. I will be filling people in on places where they might want to demonstrate against this scientific fraud that we have going on. So we'll continue with Dr. John Pippin. It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And if you haven't heard any of this interview or others, programs are archived at goveganradio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation to support the program. And we will continue with Dr. John Pippin on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Meat eaters destroy the earth.
Looking for a realtor with the ethics of a vegan and nearly 3 decades experience in Bay Area real estate? meet Judith Brooks, RE/MAX pioneer.
Thanks, Bob. I've been a vegan for almost as long as I've been a real estate broker. I got my license in 1983, and I've been a vegan for about 20 years, which is the best decision I ever made for myself and my family. It has done wonders improving my health. And now I'm proud to say I have 3 healthy vegan grandchildren.
Judith, in your profession as a realtor, you actually practice what you teach.
There are some great opportunities for people, and my motto is selling dreams, not just houses. So I love to work with people, but these are challenging economic times for others who are vulnerable to disreputable people with scams and schemes. I just want everyone to know I'm here to help.
Call Judith Brooks, RE/MAX Pioneer, 888-258-6854. That's 888-258-6854. Life as a vegan is so sweet, especially when you're enjoying Jacques' many selections of vegan organic fair trade chocolates. Look for Jacques in your natural foods market or visit Jacques' website, which you'll never find unless I spell it for you. That's S-J-A-A-K-S. S-J-A-A-K-S.com. Family owned, Jacques' chocolate bars, gift boxes, and holiday treats. Nuts, fruits, mints, caramel. No animal ingredients, no bone char sugar. Visit Jacques' website, sjaaks.com. Jacques.
Vegans are number one at number two.
Continue on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and World Week for Animals in Laboratories approaches. If you appreciate that there is an anti-vivisection radio program in mainstream media, you can support us with a tax-deductible donation. Help us pay for the airtime. We're on great progressive talk stations like Green 960 in San Francisco, KPOJ in Portland, and we have to pay for the airtime, so donate online at goveganradio.org. Today we're talking to John Pippin, MD, Senior Medical and Research Advisor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And so, Dr. Pippin, how are animals used in medical schools, for example? And have you been attaining any victories in getting any of the establishments to stop using animals and go to alternatives? And I guess we want to know what those alternatives might be also.
Traditionally in the United States and in Canada, too, medical schools used animals, you know, the iconic dog labs, for instance, to teach medical students about anatomy, physiology, surgery, and other sciences. In 1982, about 3 decades ago, 86% of U.S. medical schools were using animals in that way. Today, that number is less than 4%. And since 2005, when we became actively involved in this, the number has dropped from 24 to 7, and we are working with those 7 remaining schools to try to put an end to the use of all animals in medical education. But by the way, the dog labs ended 2 years ago. The last dog lab was at Case Western University. And now the only animals who are being used are small animals like amphibians, not to indicate that they're any less worthy. We're going to get rid of those too, but also pigs primarily. So that's been very successful. I am absolutely confident that within the next few years we're going to end all use of animals in teaching medical students how to become doctors.
Mm-hmm. Can the public help in any way? Can the public help accelerate the process?
Yeah, you can. Your callers can go to www.pcrm.org, www.pcrm.org, and you'll see all kinds of clickable boxes on our homepage, and you can go to our medical schools campaign, see what we're doing, sign up, and we'll notify you when we're acting in one way or another with one of these schools, and you can contact them and give them your opinion. Mm-hmm. So, yes, absolutely. The more the better. Our members have been very instrumental in helping us influence schools to change over the last 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, before the break, you were talking how animal research appears to be scientific fraud. It's unreliable. It's invalid. Why does it continue? Is it required by the FDA? Is that part of the reason or the reason?
Well, it's popular. The popular notion is that the Food and Drug Administration requires animals to be used. The Food and Drug Administration, as a default measure, will accept animal data, and since that's the easiest things for drug companies to do, that's what they tend to do. On the other hand, in their own laboratories, drug companies use a lot of the non-animal testing methods, which are more accurate, and they send those data to the FDA as well. So what the drug companies tell us is, look, we're in the business of selling medicines. It doesn't matter to us what we have to give to the FDA. If you want us to change, go make the FDA change. Well, things are changing, actually. The FDA and the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Institutes of Health are working together in a consortium on a project called the TOX 21, or the 21st Century Toxicology Consortium, and they are looking at identifying and promoting alternatives to the use of animals in testing chemicals and drugs for the very simple reason, as they state in their documents, that using animals has not been a reliable method. The FDA makes no bones about that. They will tell you outright, yes, we are aware of the statistics. We generated these statistics. We're the ones who tell you that more than 90% of these drugs don't work in human trials. And yes, we're interested in better ways of doing things. So we're on the road, but there is a tremendous disincentive in the industry, in the medical research and drug industries, against doing this, because of the amount of money that's tied up in NIH grants and other sources of funding.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite amazing, the amount of money that goes into scientific fraud like that.
So your listeners know, the National Institutes of Health, supported by us, our tax money, has about a $30 billion discretionary budget, and about $12 million to $13 million of that $12 to $13 billion of that $30 billion discretionary budget goes to basic science research, which is predominantly animal research. Many institutions, including California institutions, University of California, San Francisco is certainly one, get $400 to $500 million of our tax money every year to do research involving animals and other types of basic science research. That is so much money that it can't be replaced if that money were withdrawn. So there's a tremendous disincentive for very powerful institutions to resist this, because the transition to non-animal methods will take some time, and in the meantime, they're wondering, where's the funding going to come from?
Well, I wish the Tea Party members were listening to this now. What a waste of money. $12 billion or so a year? Is that what you think goes toward?
Yeah, it's depending on what source you use, it's $12 billion or $13 billion. Well, what's a billion between friends, right?
Right, exactly. But we could finance another war if we gave up animal research. So where are our priorities? We could have yet another war and still afford it. And these were such weird tests, too. I mean, like the LD50 test, isn't that? I mean, it just seems so, you know, out of the dark ages, you know? Right?
Well, it is. As a matter of fact, the United States is the only country now that still in some circumstances requires the use of the LD50 test. It's prohibited in the European Union, for example, and there are alternatives that are just as accurate. But as advanced as the United States likes to claim it is in scientific areas, we still use antiquated and absolutely useless, irreproducible animal tests like the LD50 test.
And we should explain quickly what the LD, that's lethal dose 50, right? Like lethal dose 50%, right?
Exactly right. It's a particularly ugly test where you determine the approximate toxicity of a chemical or a drug by giving it in gradually increasing doses to laboratory animals, typically mice, until 50% of them die from the injections. And that's the LD50, and then they use that to extrapolate what might be a safe dose for humans. Well, it's crazy because there's no correlation between the LD50 and safe doses for people. It's just a checkbox that over the decades has had to be marked before you could send your results to the FDA. And the U.S. is the only country that still uses the LD50 or the Dreyse test, where they drop chemicals in the eyes of rabbits or put it on their skin and look for burning or other damage from the chemicals.
The poor Easter bunny getting burned like that. And what are the alternatives in medical school and in drug testing? What are the valid alternatives?
Well, the alternatives in medical school are numerous. The lectures, case studies, what are called patient examples, where you have people who mimic diseases, videos, and simulators, interactive computer programs and simulators that teach human physiology using human body mannequins that are programmed to respond to drugs in the way that a human would, as opposed to, say, the way that a dog or a pig would. These are all available. They are used by all but a handful, as I mentioned, of U.S. medical schools. By the way, no medical schools in Canada are using animals anymore. There's only a handful in the U.S. So there are lots of alternatives that have been adopted and have replaced the use of animals in U.S. Medical schools.
Medical schools.
In drug testing, there's everything from computer databases where you enter information on known human effects and side effects of drug and make that information available to everyone so you don't have to duplicate testing for every similar drug as is done now for proprietary reasons. There are genetic-based tests that can be used, various types of sophisticated imaging like functional MRI, human cells and tissues. Stem cells are huge and really limitless resource, because you can use stem cells from people. You can take a little pinch of skin. You can take those cells back to the embryonic stem cell stage, grow them into any tissue you want, and study the drugs in that patient's own tissues. Microfluidics, which are the humans on a chip, where you put a drop of the drug in there and it follows the course it would in the human body, and you can see what happens. And just a variety of other things that are out there. But the inertia is tremendous, and while all of these methods are used to some extent in the drug industry and in the medical research industry, they are not used as much as they should be because of resistance from the current generation of scientists and researchers, and also because of the economics of the situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in the field of vivisection. I see the researchers have very nice houses near UCLA, and you know, there's just a lot of business that goes into it, from making restraints and equipment to producing animals for it. It's really tied into greed and money a lot, it seems.
Well, a lot of it is, and it's not just what goes on in the laboratory. It's the other companies who supply the animals, who supply the cages, the chemicals, the drugs. There's a tremendous network, an entire superstructure that's built around this that would come tumbling down if we no longer needed animals for this kind of research. And it's like the F-22 fighter. The military didn't want it. It was a waste of money, and yet Congress kept passing the funding authority because they wanted to keep the jobs. So you got all these very expensive fighter jets piled up in places where they'll never be used, but the people in the senator's district still have jobs. It's craziness. It's chasing your tail. It's a tremendous waste of not just of economic resources, but when you think about using animals to study human diseases and how that correlates with a failure to address the true causes and treatments for these diseases, it's not only an economic cost, it's a cost in human lives, and it's a cost in hope. These patients and their families are trusting us to come up with effective ways to prevent or treat these diseases, and we're more focused on continuing an archaic way because there's a lot of money and good careers in it.
So the animal research actually gets in the way of medical progress and advancement. I guess we haven't really found cures, even though people keep saying, "Oh, my baby or the dog," or, you know, "Oh, you just want to want to experiment on people first," you know. But in a way, I guess we are experimenting. You know, each time we move from an animal test to humans, it is a first test because the animal tests are so unreliable.
The reason we start over is because we know we can't trust the animal tests. And these billboards that are going up, Foundation for Biomedical Research around the country, saying, "Would you choose a laboratory animal or your baby?" That is absurd. You could, I hate to even say this, you could kill as many laboratory animals as you want, and you're not going to save a baby. You know, we have the highest premature birth rate. We have the highest infant mortality rate. We're behind even third world countries like Cuba, and we spend so many millions of dollars on this kind of birth defect research using animals. It's a fraud on the American public. And they're trading in lives, they're trading in hope, but they're getting their money.
That's it. Okay, well, Dr. Pippin, we are just about out of time. We've been talking to John Pippin, MD, Senior Medical and Research Advisor for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. You can go to the website, which is pcrm.org. And I want to thank you for being with us today, Dr. Pippin.
Okay, thanks for asking me.
Okay.
I'm a vegan because meat hurts animals.
Do you know the way to eat in San Jose? A special treat, no meat in San Jose. It's Vegetarian House Organic Vegan Restaurant, 520 East Santa Clara Street, downtown San Jose. Vegetarian House, a world-class dining experience since 1994, featuring fine cuisine from around the world. Vietnam, China, Thailand, India, Europe, the Middle East, and the Americas. Made from local organic GMO-free ingredients. Sauces, bean curd, and noodles made in-house. Powered by rooftop solar panels, Vegetarian House, concerned with the environment, compassion for animals, and your health, offers to-go packaging that's biodegradable and compostable. See the extensive menu at vegetarianhouse.us, including appetizers, soup, salad, sandwiches, dazzling desserts, organic fruit and vegetable juices. Vegetarian House, 520 East Santa Clara Street, San Jose. Catering available. Open for weekday lunch specials from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., dinner 5 to 9, Saturday and Sunday 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Call 408-292-3798, vegetarianhouse.us.
What do Paul McCartney, the Skinny Bitch Ultimate Everyday Cookbook, and a box of gourmet chocolates have in common? You can find all three at PETA.org. Check out the latest buzz about your favorite animal-friendly celebrities, discover fun and fabulous gifts for the entire family, and find out ways to help all of our furry, feathered, and finned friends. PETA.org has something for every animal lover. Get active, get informed, and maybe even get yourself a gift at PETA.org today.
As beautiful as ballet is, there is cruelty at its very soul. The sad secret? Most ballet slippers are made with animal skins, leather, and suede. It doesn't have to be that way. You or your children can dance cruelty-free with Cynthia King Vegan Ballet Slippers. Super soft canvas, non-slip, full sole or split sole, stretch drawstring. Cynthia King Vegan Ballet Slippers. Order online, just $24.95 plus shipping and handling. Visit CynthiaKingDance.com. Academy Award winner Natalie Portman ordered them. Emily Deschanel ordered them for her TV show Bones. Now you can too. Call 718-437-0101. 718-437-0101. Hear the Cynthia King interview at goveganradio.org. Click Listen to Past Shows, March 6th, 2011. CynthiaKingDance.com.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Thank you.
Yes, it's Go Vegan with Bob Linden, an anti-vivisection radio program. Imagine that. Well, don't imagine it. Support it so that it stays a reality. You can make a tax-deductible donation to help us buy the airtime by making your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147, or donate online at goveganradio.org. Well, for World Week for Animals in Laboratories, you have the opportunity to protest and demonstrate against vivisection, the cruelty, the human lives lost, the billions of dollars wasted every year. In Portland, this coming Wednesday, April 20th, the demonstration is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Oregon Health and Science University, 3181 Southwest Sam Jackson Park Road. Again, that's this Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Oregon Health and Science University. Then coming up on Monday, the 25th, a number of demonstrations. For example, UC Berkeley, noon to 2, that's at Oxford and University Avenue. Also Monday, the 25th at noon at UC Davis in front of the cafeteria. And on Monday, April 25th at UCLA, you meet at noon at Westwood Boulevard and LeConte. Well, if you saw Dr. Tel Oren speak at the World Veg Weekend at Golden Gate Park last year, you're probably interested in attending his upcoming Bay Area lectures. He'll be in San Carlos next Sunday, the 24th at 4 p.m. The topic, How Innocent Food Can Destroy Our Health. You can go to meetup.com/tableoflife or call 650-595-1779. Again, meetup.com/tableoflife. Next Monday, the 25th, 7 p.m., Dr. Tel Oren is in Walnut Creek. The lecture, The Anti-Aging Lifestyle, Scientific Principles for Youthful Appearance. For that, you go to meetup.com/East Bay Eco Health Network, but there are some dashes in there, so it's EastBay-Eco-Health-Network. So meetup.com, EastBay-Eco-Health-Network. Dr. T will be in the Bay Area through April 30th. More locations for his lectures on next week's program. You can also go to youtube.com/concerninghealth. And if you'd like to advertise your vegan products, email me, bob@goveganradio.com. Thanks to Dennis Stovall for audio production. Next week, Rodline Getzik of the Deftones. Be my friend on Facebook. It's Bob Linden on Twitter. Go Vegan Radio. Love animals. Don't eat them. Don't wear them. Don't buy products tested upon them. For archives and podcasts and to donate online, visit goveganradio.org. Greetings, Bob Linden here with the Go Vegan Friday feature on Green 960. Don't miss Go Vegan with Bob Linden this Sunday at 3 p.m. As World Week for Animals in Laboratories approaches, there will be protests. Where? Listen this Sunday. So, just what do animal rights activists have against vivisection or animal experimentation? Is it that it's cruel? Is it that it wastes billions of dollars every year? Is it that it's fraudulent science that impedes medical progress and costs countless human lives? Is it all of the above? My guest this week is John Pippin, MD, board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, and nuclear cardiology, and a former faculty member of the Harvard Medical School. Dr. Pippin is senior medical and research advisor to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Why do schools such as UCSF continue to engage in this fraudulent science? Money, 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 money. Well, speaking of money, did you know we pay for expensive broadcast airtime every week? So when you support Go Vegan with Bob Linden, you also support Progressive Talk Radio, Green 960. To make a tax-deductible donation, make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, 94147. For archives and podcasts and to donate online, visit goveganradio.org. Support Anti-Vivisection Radio. You can also advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products affordably. Email bob@goveganradio.com. Tomorrow in Sacramento is the Vegan Social Day at Sugar Plum Vegan Cafe, noon to 4. Music, local artists, info tables, and a solar cooking demonstration. That's tomorrow, noon to 4, Sugar Plum Vegan Cafe, 2315 K Street in Midtown Sacramento. Broadcast of Go Vegan with Bob Linden is made possible in the Bay Area by Vegetarian House, world-class vegan organic cuisine in downtown San Jose at 520 East Santa Clara Street. Visit vegetarianhouse.us and by Loving Hut Vegan Restaurants, now with over 200 worldwide. The first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford students and faculty have a Loving Hut at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. For the Loving Hut near you, visit lovinghut.us. Get a 10% discount on all orders over $50 at veganessentials.com when you put GVR for Go Vegan Radio in the coupon box. Over 1,200 vegan items at veganessentials.com. If you're looking for a realtor with the ethics of a vegan and 30 years Bay Area real estate experience, contact Judith Brooks of RE/MAX. Her email is jbrooks, J-B-R-O-O-K-S, at remax.net. Please be my friend on Facebook. It's Bob Linden. On Twitter, Go Vegan Radio. For events around the Bay Area, visit the website of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. That is sfvs.org. And again, for archives and podcasts, and to make a donation online, please visit goveganradio.org.